Chapter 37. The family council. It was at 11 o'clock the next morning that the aunts and uncles came to hold their consultation. The fire was lighted in the large parlor, and poor Mrs. Tulliver, with a confused impression that it was a great occasion, like a funeral, unbagged the bell rope tassels, and unpinned the curtains, adjusting them in proper folds, looking round and shaking her head sadly at the polished tops and legs of the tables, which Sister Pullet herself could not accuse of insufficient brightness. Mr. Dean was not coming, he was away on business. But Mrs. Dean appeared punctually in that handsome new gig with the head to it, and the livery servant driving it, which had thrown so clear a light on several traits in her character to some of her female friends in St. Ogg's. Mr. Dean had been advancing in the world as rapidly as Mr. Tulliver had been going down in it, and in Mrs. Dean's house the Dodson linen and plate were beginning to hold quite a subordinate position, as a mere supplement to the handsomer articles of the same kind, purchased in recent years, a change which had caused an occasional coolness in the sisterly intercourse between her and Mrs. Glegg, who felt that Susan was getting like the rest, and there would soon be little of the true Dodson spirit surviving except in herself, and, it might be hoped, in those nephews who supported the Dodson name on the family land, far away in the woods. People who live at a distance are naturally less faulty than those immediately under our own eyes, and it seems superfluous, when we consider the remote geographical position of the Ethiopians, and how very little the Greeks had to do with them, to inquire further why Homer calls them lameless. Mrs. Dean was the first to arrive, and when S.E. had taken her seat in the large parlor, Mrs. Tulliver came down to her with her comely face a little distorted, nearly as it would have been if S.E. had been crying. She was not a woman who could shed abundant tears, except in moments when the prospect of losing her furniture became unusually vivid, but she felt how unfitting it was to be quite calm under present circumstances. "Oh, sister, what a world this is," she exclaimed as she entered. "What trouble, oh dear!" Mrs. Dean was a thin-lipped woman, who made small well-considered speeches on peculiar occasions, repeating them afterward to her husband, and asking him if S.E. had not spoken very properly. "Yes, sister," she said deliberately, "this is a changing world, and we don't know today what may happen tomorrow. But it's right to be prepared for all things, and if trouble's sent, to remember as it isn't sent without a cause. I'm very sorry for you as a sister, and if the doctor orders jelly for Mr. Tulliver, I hope you'll let me know. I'll send it willingly, for it is but right he should have proper attendance while he's ill." "Thank you, Susan," said Mrs. Tulliver, rather faintly, withdrawing her fat hand from her sister's thin one. "But there's been no talk o' jelly yet." Then after a moment's pause she added, "There's a dozen o'-cut jelly glasses upstairs. I shall never put jelly into 'em no more." Her voice was rather agitated as she uttered the last words, but the sound of wheels diverted her thoughts. Mr. and Mrs. Glegg were come, and were almost immediately followed by Mr. and Mrs. Pullet. Mrs. Pullet entered crying, as a compendious mode, at all times, of expressing what were her views of life in general, and what, in brief, were the opinions she held concerning the particular case before her. Mrs. Glegg had on her fuzziest front, and garments which appeared to have had a recent resurrection from rather a creasy form of burial, a costume selected with the high moral purpose of instilling perfect humility into Bessie and her children. "Mrs. G., won't you come nearer the fire?" said her husband, unwilling to take the more comfortable seat without offering it to her. "You see I've seated myself here, Mr. Glegg," returned this superior woman. "You can roast yourself, if you like." "Well," said Mr. Glegg, seating himself good-humoredly, "and how's the poor man upstairs?" "Dr. Turnbull thought him a deal better this morning," said Mrs. Tulliver. "He took more notice, and spoke to me, but he's never known Tom yet, looks at the poor lad, as if he was a stranger, though he said something once about Tom and the pony. The doctor says his memory's gone a long way back, and he doesn't know Tom, because he's thinking of him when he was little. Eh dear. I doubt it's the water got on his brain, said Aunt Pullet, turning round from adjusting her cap in a melancholy way at the pier glass. It's much if he ever gets up again, and if he does, he'll most likely be childish, as Mr. Carr was, poor man. They fed him with a spoon, as if he'd been a babby for 3 years. He'd quite lost the use of his limbs, but then he'd got a bath chair, and somebody to draw him, and that's what he won't have, I doubt, Bessie. Sister Pullet, said Mrs. Glegg, severely, if I understand right, we've come together this morning to advise and consult about what's to be done in this disgrace as has fallen upon the family, and not to talk o' people as don't belong to us. Mr. Carr was none of our blood, nor no ways connected with us, as I've ever heard. Sister Glegg, said Mrs. Pullet, in a pleading tone, drawing on her gloves again, and stroking the fingers in an agitated manner, if you've got anything disrespectful to say, oh Mr. Carr, I do beg of you as you won't say it to me. I know what he was, she added, with a sigh. His breath was short to that degree as you could hear him 2 rooms off. Sophie, said Mrs. Glegg, with indignant disgust, you do talk o' people's complaints till it's quite indecent. But I say again, as I said before, I didn't come away from home to talk about acquaintances, whether they'd short breath or long. If we aren't come together for one, to hear what the other'll do to save a sister and her children from the parish, I shall go back. One can't act without the other, I suppose. It isn't to be expected as I should do everything. Well, Jane, said Mrs. Pullet, I don't see as you've been so very forward at doing. So far as I know, this is the first time as here you've been, since it's been known as the bailiff's in the house, and I was here yesterday, and looked at all Bessie's linen and things, and I told her I'd buy in the spotted tablecloths. I couldn't speak fairer. For as for the teapot, as she doesn't want to go out o' the family, it stands to sense I can't do with 2 silver teapots, not if it hadn't a straight spout, but the spotted damask I was allays fond on. I wish it could be managed so as my teapot, and Cheney and the best casters needn't be put up for sale, said poor Mrs. Tulliver, beseechingly, and the sugar tongs the first things ever I bought. But that can't be helped, you know, said Mr. Glegg. If one o' the family chooses to buy 'em in, they can, but one thing must be bid for as well as another. And it isn't to be looked for, said Uncle Pullet, with unwonted independence of idea, as your own family should pay more for things nor they'll fetch. They may go for an old song by auction. Oh dear, said Mrs. Tulliver. To think o' my Cheney being sold I that way, and I bought it when I was married, just as you did yours, Jane and Sophie, and I know you didn't like mine, because o' the sprig, but I was fond of it, and there's never been a bit broke, for I've washed it myself, and there's the tulips on the cups, and the roses, as anybody might go, and look at 'em for pleasure. You wouldn't like your Cheney to go for an old song, and be broke to pieces, though yours has got no color in it, Jane, it's all white and fluted, and didn't cost so much as mine. And there's the casters, Sister Dean, I can't think, but you'd like to have the casters, for I've heard you say they're pretty. Well, I've no objection to buy some of the best things, said Mrs. Dean, rather loftily. We can do with extra things in our house. Best things, exclaimed Mrs. Glegg, with severity, which had gathered intensity from her long silence. It drives me past patience, to hear you all talking o' best things, and buying in this, that, and the other, such as silver and Cheney. You must bring your mind to your circumstances, Bessie, and not be thinking o' silver and Cheney, but whether you shall get so much as a flock bed to lie on, and a blanket to cover you, and a stool to sit on. You must remember, if you get 'em, it'll be because your friends have bought 'em for you, for you're dependent upon them for everything, for your husband lies there helpless, and hasn't got a penny i' the world to call his own. And it's for your own good I say this. For it's right you should feel what your state is, and what disgrace your husband's brought on your own family, as you've got to look to for everything, and be humble in your mind. Mrs. Glegg paused, for speaking with much energy for the good of others is naturally exhausting. Mrs. Tulliver, always borne down by the family predominance of Sister Jane, who had made her wear the yoke of a younger sister in very tender years, said pleadingly, I'm sure, sister, I've never asked anybody to do anything, only buy things as it 'ud be a pleasure to 'em to have, so as they mightn't go and be spoiled by strange houses. I never asked anybody to buy the things in for me and my children, though there's the linen I spun, and I thought when Tom was born, I thought one o' the first things, when he was lying by the cradle, as all the things I'd bought why my own money, and been so careful of, 'ud go to him. But I've said nothing as I wanted my sisters, to pay their money for me. What my husband has done for his sister's unknown, and we should have been better off this day, if it hadn't been as he's lent money, and never asked for it again. Come, come, said Mr. Glegg, kindly, don't let us make things too dark. What's done can't be undone. We shall make a shift among us to buy what's sufficient for you, though, as Mrs. G. says, they must be useful, plain things. We mustn't be thinking oh what's unnecessary. A table, and a chair or two, and kitchen things, and a good bed, and such like. Why, I've seen the day, when I shouldn't have known myself, if I'd lain on sacking instead o' the floor. We get a deal o' useless things about us, only because we've got the money to spend. Mr. Glegg, said Mrs. G., if you will be kind enough to let me speak, instead o' taking the words out o' my mouth, I was going to say, Bessie, as it's fine talking for you to say as you've never asked us to buy anything for you, let me tell you, you ought to have asked us. Pray, how are you to be provided for, if your own family don't help you? You must go to the parish, if they didn't. And you ought to know that, and keep it in mind, and ask us humble to do what we can for you, instead o' saying, and making a boast, as you've never asked us for anything. You talked o' the mosses, and what Mr. Tulliver's done for 'em, said Uncle Pullet, who became unusually suggestive, where advances of money were concerned. H, haven't they been near you? They ought to do something as well as other folks. And if he's lent them money, they ought to be made to pay it back. Yes, to be sure, said Mrs. Dean. I've been thinking so. How is it Mr. and Mrs. Moss aren't here to meet us? It is but right they should do their share. Oh, dear, said Mrs. Tulliver. I never sent them word about Mr. Tulliver, and they live so backward among the lanes at Bassett, they never hear anything, only when Mr. Moss comes to market. But I never gave them a thought. I wonder Maggie didn't, though, for she was allay so fond of her Aunt Moss. Why don't your children come in, Bessie? Said Mrs. Pullet, at the mention of Maggie. Tea they should hear what their aunts and uncles have got to say, and Maggie, when it's me as have paid for half her schooling, she ought to think more of her Aunt Pullet than of Aunt Moss. I may go off sudden, when I get home today, there's no telling. If I'd had my way, said Mrs. Glegg, the children ud ha been in the room from the first. It's time they knew who they've to look to, and it's right as somebody should talk to 'em, and let 'em know their condition I life, and what they're come down to, and make 'em feel as they've got to suffer for their father's faults. Well, I'll go and fetch 'em, sister, said Mrs. Tulliver, resignedly. She was quite crushed now, and thought of the treasures, in the storeroom with no other feeling than blank despair. She went upstairs to fetch Tom and Maggie, who were both in their father's room, and was on her way down again, when the sight of the storeroom door suggested a new thought to her. She went toward it, and left the children, to go down by themselves. The aunts and uncles appeared to have been in warm discussion, when the brother and sister entered, both with shrinking reluctance, For though Tom, with a practical sagacity which had been roused into activity by the strong stimulus of the new emotions he had undergone since yesterday, had been turning over in his mind a plan which he meant to propose to one of his aunts or uncles, he felt by no means amicably toward them, and dreaded meeting them all at once as he would have dreaded a large dose of concentrated physic, which was but just endurable in small draughts. As for Maggie, she was peculiarly depressed this morning, as he had been called up, after brief rest, at 3 o'clock, and had that strange dreamy weariness which comes from watching in a sick room through the chill hours of early twilight and breaking day, in which the outside daylight life seems to have no importance, and to be a mere margin to the hours, in the darkened chamber. Their entrance interrupted the conversation. The shaking of hands was a melancholy and silent ceremony, till Uncle Pullet observed, as Tom approached him, "Well, young sir, we've been talking as we should want your pen and ink. You can write rarely now, after all your schooling, I should think." "Eh, eh," said Uncle Glegg, with admonition which he meant to be kind, "we must look to see the good of all this schooling, as your father's sunk so much money in now. When land is gone and money spent, then learning is most excellent. ..., now's the time, Tom, to let us see the good o' your learning. Let us see whether you can do better than I can, as have made my fortune without it. But I began why doing with little, you see. I could live on a basin o' porridge, and a crust o' bread and cheese. But I doubt high living, and high learning all make it harder for you, young man, nor it was for me." "But he must do it," interposed Aunt Glegg, energetically, "whether it's hard or no. He hasn't got to consider what's hard. He must consider as he isn't to trust into his friends, to keep him in idleness and luxury. He's got to bear the fruits of his father's misconduct, and bring his mind to fare hard, and to work hard. And he must be humble and grateful to his aunts and uncles for what they're doing for his mother and father, as must be turned out into the streets and go to the workhouse if they didn't help him. And his sister too," continued Mrs. Glegg, looking severely at Maggie, who had sat down on the sofa by her Aunt Dean, drawn to her by the sense that she was Lucy's mother. "She must make up her mind to be humble and work, for there'll be no servants to wait on her any more. She must remember that. She must do the work o' the house, and she must respect and love her aunts as have done so much for her, and saved their money, to leave to their nephews and nieces." Tom was still standing before the table in the center of the group. There was a heightened color in his face, and he was very far from Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.